Hey everybody, welcome back to the Rust is Gold Racing Podcast. We are here at Sandia BMW Motorrad with Chris Bronstorp. We have a demo day going on and barbecue and lots of cool stuff.
Down the way, not too far, an old time rockabilly coffee bar. Wrecking machine tucked in the back, Elvis singing about a Cadillac. I'm on a BSA, been riding all day. Leather's on, goggles too, triumphing, I don't know what you want to do. My boys are on Ducatis, happen now all the while. Yeah, these are rockers, it's their style.
So let's ride, so let's ride.
Tyson's trying to recover from a concert he went to last night. What was the concert you were at?
It was Cro-Mags. This old school, kind of like New York hardcore type of band. I don't know when the last time I came through Albuquerque was, but it was cool. You know, I might have been like one of the younger guys in the room for once, and it was a cool old school kind of punk hardcore show.
Yeah, it was an old school old guy concert?
Yeah, definitely.
Old school old guy concert.
Well, it's kind of funny. I went to the Rakim show the other day on Thursday. With Therapy and Rakim,
right,
and
right.
You know, he's in his late 50s now, or almost 60s. He still looked like he was 35. Guy looked amazing.
Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, it was so funny to go to a hip hop show and everybody was probably average age of 43.
Yeah,
you know, it was just funny.
Is he living kind of like that clean lifestyle type of thing too?
Probably. Yeah, yeah, he looked like he was
vegan, yeah. Water, no.
Yeah, booze. Just totally. I mean, he didn't look like he had an age today.
Yeah, yeah. I saw the picture you posted. He looked great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But same thing. It was so loud. I don't usually go to shows like that, and my ears were still ringing last night when I went to bed. It's horrible.
That's why, you know, you get to that old stage when you're the guy that has the earplugs in.
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, I don't care about if I look cool.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure I can hear the next day.
Do you have earplugs in?
No, I wasn't that guy. I'm getting close, though.
I'm getting close. Yeah, the ringing drove me nuts. So I was like, oh, man, this is not fun.
Hey, Chris, tell us what's going on here today.
Yeah, so we're going to have we're having a little demo day today. So we got we have about 7 or 8 demo bikes for the whole line of BMW. And then if somebody, of course, wants to ride a bike that's not on the line, they're more than welcome, of course. Just for people to come down and test them. I mean, we have demos every day. People come test ride whatever they want. We just thought we kind of promote it. Because we have some new models coming out this year. And it's important to get these 18s out of here as well. But just to invite people to come down that haven't really tried the bikes out, especially the water-cooled 1200s that have been out since 2014, or 13 and a half, actually, but still an amazing bike, totally refined. But the new 1250 is coming out here, and actually next week we should be seeing them. So totally new platform, to more power, more torque. Mm-hmm. It's a really exciting time. So yeah, if anybody wants to come down and test ride some bikes and just try something out, take it out and have some fun. No mileage restrictions or so on. So just go out and spend some time on it.
And that's why we're here.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Have those bikes.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the things that we all, when we started this podcast, one of the things that we said was, not only do we want to support our local vendors and our local community, but you want to test ride some cool bikes, man,
and
see what they're about. So tell us about the new R9Ts that you guys have coming out and some of the demos that you have for that.
For sure. So the R9T came out in 2014, and they came for the first 2 years. It was pretty much the same build of the bike. You know, they have aluminum tank. Of course, the 1200 Boxer engine. It's a last generation Boxer. So that platform's been out for years. So it's way refined, way smooth, way reliable. But it's 110 horsepower and great torque range all throughout. So there's no surprise power points at 5 or 6,000 RPM or so on. So it's a really smooth, comfortable, fun bike to ride. So then back in 2016, they started changing the models up a little bit, offering more options. Now they actually have 5 different variants of that bike. Everything from everything from the Pure, which is a kind of a lower, lower option bike, but the cost of bike is, you know, starts at 12.1. So it's a nice base model, same engine, you know, same platform. Of course, the shocks are a little bit less expensive, but they actually handle well still. So it's somebody in that price point or whatever, you know, they can get into it. They customize the bike however they want. That's the whole base behind the bike. But also they have the standard R9T, which is pretty much the performance R9T. So it's got high performance shocks on it. It's pretty much the only difference that sets it apart from the Pure. But the Pure does have a steel tank, while the R9T has an aluminum tank.
So a little bit lighter weight. Yeah,
exactly.
All around, yeah.
Yeah. They also offer the Scrambler version, of course, which they do that, and the Urban GS, which is the same platform. They're about inch and a half taller, depending on the seat heights and so on. But that's a fun bike too. It does have the water-cooled GS wheels on it, the spokes, so that they're outside spokes, so they're tubeless. 19-inch front, 17-inch rear, and it's another fun bike to ride. You know, it is off-road capable, but you know, if you are an adventure bike rider and are used to, you know, dirt bikes and so on, you know, it's definitely a stiff ride off-road.
And it's got a lower kind of profile too, right?
Yeah.
So it's has the Scrambler kind of look and feel to it.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, and just with the boxer style engine, you know, and the way it's set up, it's got such a low center of gravity, so it's really easy to handle on and off-road. So it's just a really fun all-around bike.
And that hasn't changed. I mean, I've got an R100
yeah.
and an R75, the same thing. Mm-hmm. That low center of gravity, balance of the boxer engine, it's an easy bike to handle.
Yeah.
Which is what I've always liked, and that's what has appealed to me with BMW since the beginning.
They're going to continue the R9T version through 19, through 20.
Great.
Probably in 20, we'll probably see a revamp of the bike. But I haven't seen anything about it.
Well, when they kind of reintroduced the R9, right, mm-hmm. They kind of went with a retro kind of look, right? I mean, it's not fully retro like a lot of the other companies are doing, but mm-hmm. it still has that kind of almost retro cafe kind of Scrambler kind of feel to it, right?
Yeah.
So was there did BMW see a need for that, or?
Yeah, BMW did, you know, they wanted to bring a classic style bike onto the market. You know, keep a platform, a mechanical platform that was way reliable, that they want to keep the shaft drive, which they've had since, you know, for decades as it is, because it's a way low maintenance system. These engineers, man, the German engineers, they keep their, you know, they find something that works, they usually hold on to it, or if it's working so well and it's perfect, they'll totally change the whole thing again.
Right.
That's what they're doing with the RR this year.
Yeah.
The current RR is such a refined superbike, so comfortable, so fast, so easy to handle. They changed the whole bike. Like, so we can't just change one thing, let's change everything about it.
Well, you and I were talking about the RR outside, and you said that's going to be the fastest performance or production bike.
Yeah, that's what they're claiming. Right? Yeah. So it's not going to be the most powerful per se. You know, there's still a couple of Ducatis and other bikes that have a little more horsepower, like the H2 Kawasaki and all that, but it's going to have the most powerful torque range for the longest period of time. So it's going to have variable camshaft inside the engine. So it's going to be, you know, low torque. It's going to be at high torque at low RPMs all the way up through.
And what's the displacement on that?
Still 1,000.
Still 1,000.
Still 998.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's kept it. And it's going to be, the bike's going to be about 10 to 12 pounds lighter than the current one. The technology, everything. They changed the whole bike. So I've only seen it in clay form.
Mm-hmm.
But they're out now. They've been test ridden for the past year.
Wow.
So we'll see that in Q2, which is going to be probably April, May time period. So,
yeah. I'm going back to kind of like the retro look that mm-hmm. you guys were doing with the R9T. Because you guys went back, you guys were doing a lot of like sport bikes for a long time and adventure bikes, and that was the big seller.
Mm-hmm.
And then it looks like you guys, what year did they come out?
With the R9T? R9T's, 14.
Yeah. Okay, so 2014, they kind of revamped their whole look and model.
Yeah.
Right. How's that done for BMW?
It's done. It's not a huge that demographic, that style of bike is honestly not that popular in the motorcycle world in general. It's getting more popular with the demographic of people that are riding now, because the younger generations are coming up, millennials and so on. They are starting to go. They're not buying cars. They are starting to buy motorcycles.
Right.
Depending on where you live, too. You know, of course, you live in a big city, New York, San Francisco, whatever, it's a lot more popular. But a lot of them just aren't driving or riding, doing anything anymore. They're all, you know, on their phones and doing whatever else. But so it doesn't, it's not a huge, you know, BMW, the GS line still holds 65% of the adventure market.
Yeah.
And then the, of course, the RT line, you know, that's the next biggest seller for BMW. The 1600s too are a huge seller. So the R9T platform, you know, probably holds, you know, I saw the numbers a few months ago, but it's only probably about 10-12% of the BMW sales.
Wow.
But it's getting bigger. They're growing. That's why they only had that one model, R9T model at the beginning. Now they have the different variants and just to give different options for people. That way, you know, money's pretty tight for most people today. So, you know, it's customizing is fun, but it gets expensive.
Right.
You know, a motorcycle wheel is anywhere from, you know, $1,200 to $1,800 compared to an automotive wheel. So changing wheels or handlebars or anything else is expensive. So that's why they, you know, that's why Triumph and BMW and the other models are making different variants. So you can just buy it as it is right away.
Right.
You know, and then you can make them easily customizable if you want, and that's so on. So it's,
yeah,
it all depends.
For us, you know, we always try and gear the podcast toward the vintage classic style, yeah, of motorcycle. And it's interesting that you said that for BMW to have one model and then what, 3-4 years later, you got three models. I mean, I think that does say that, you know, that that market is expanding.
Yeah.
You know, Triumph had to say the T word. I wasn't going to say it, but had to say it. Is doing, you know, a couple of models. Guzzi still has the same style of.
Yeah. Guzzi's look the same.
Look the same, yeah, right? And the, still producing them. Ducati. You know, I think that whole look and style and vibe is still. Still growing.
It is growing. You know, like, yeah, I mean, Ducati was smart for them. They have like 9 to 11 different variants of the Scrambler and, you know, cafe style bikes, different size engines and so on.
Yeah.
You know, Ducati's a great brand. It's an awesome bike. You know, if family members had them, but it's, so the support for them, you know, they don't have the support that Triumph and BMW do. They're just not as popular in a lot of places. And I think the biggest thing too, which I remember you guys were talking about this in the last podcast, was the price of these bikes. Mm-hmm. People have such a idea of the costs of these bikes. They're not that expensive. You know, you see, you know, Harley still holds, you know, a huge market in the U.S., but most of those bikes are 25, you know, plus. So it's you know, like even the K1600 GTL fully loaded bike is only $28,000 loaded. So it's, you know, to have all these scrambler bikes and cafe style bikes, they're all around the 14-ish range. That's, you know, that's a pretty cheap payment, you know, to finance. And, you know, all these companies finance, that's, they're all affordable, you know, and so it's, it helps get people on bikes and on two wheels and, yeah, to just let them know that it's possible. You know, you, right, don't have to save up and always have to pay cash for a motorcycle. A lot of people have that connotation, they have to, because it's not a needed item. But, you know, they can still get on a bike.
Yeah. You're an adventure bike rider.
Mm-hmm.
So, for you, I mean, you lean more toward the GS, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think about that market as it's growing?
That's the fastest growing market currently right now. It has been for the past 5 years. So that's, I mean, we get numerous touring bikes, no matter what brand they are, coming in, trading it for the GS. So it's, just people, especially where we live, and, you know, especially out in the West, so many, most of the roads are all dirt. And to be able to take a bike off-road and handle it and be able to bike to be able to, a lot of people are intimidated. I mean, yeah, to take a 530-pound bike off-road,
yeah,
it's like, how do you even do that? You know, and it's like, you believe how, like, stable and comfortable it is. You know, cause I've, you know, done dirt bikes, and too, you know, Tyson did a lot of dirt bike riding, and it's fun. It's a different style. It's a different type of riding because, you know, it's fast, it's quick. But the adventure bikes, you know, you have to go a little slower and a little different style of riding, different training. But it's so fun. I mean, just to be able to go camping off the bike, and you can ride that bike to Seattle, or you can, you know, 10 minutes from here, you could be off-road, you know, jumping it and going through, yeah, mud puddles and
true,
all that. It's just, just to combine it with cars. It's like everybody going to sedans, to SUVs.
Right.
They want to sit up higher. They want to go off-road. They want all-wheel drive, you know.
Do you think some of that plays into the fact that maybe a lot of these younger riders aren't afraid to drop a dual sport?
Correct.
You know, I mean,
that's a big one.
You know, it has crash guards on it and whatnot, mm-hmm, and if you drop it, okay, well, I can pick it back up. It's not, the tank isn't fried.
Exactly. Whereas that's a huge, no, that's a huge aspect. I mean, that's the biggest fear when anybody starts to ride.
Yeah.
Everybody rides in general. They don't want to drop their bike and scratch it. And,
right.
Oh my God. You know, so it's, you know, with the engine guards, yeah, these bikes are designed to go down. Mm-hmm. And once you actually get used to going down and dropping it, it's just, you just laugh at it now. Like, I don't know how many times I've dropped mine. And, gone down steep hills and tumble off and whatever. The thing is, most time when you do that, you're going 2-5 miles an hour anyway.
Yeah.
And so you get used to falling, and it's, and you're, so that fear starts to go away, and you get more confident on the bike. You start leaning into the corners harder more because you're not so afraid of it. And just to be able to learn how to pick it up. Yeah, people, you know, how do you pick up a 500-pound bike? Yeah, there's a technique to it.
Sure.
But it's actually not that hard.
Well, speaking of which, you guys offer like a lot of classes here and courses, right? Mm-hmm. For
off-road riding and dual sport? What are some of those things that you guys do?
So, you know, first off, we do cater to the MSF. They do training here upstairs. We do a couple outlets for the adventure bike training. We have West 38 Moto from Colorado comes down. Dusty Wessels is the guy for that. He comes down and does about 6 to 8 weekend trainings a year. And it's 2 full days off-road training. Most of it's all slow, you know, just learning how to handle the bike off-road. Tight turns, you know, how to stand up, how to lean correctly, and all that, how to pick up the bike, of course.
Yeah.
He has about 2 or 3 levels of training and tours to go out and really get comfortable on the bike. We're also together with, of course, BMW Motorrad and Rawhide Adventures. They have schools in Colorado and California and in North Carolina. And I'm actually going to Rawhide in January to go out there and just check out their school there. I haven't been at that location yet. But it's, every time we sell one of these bikes, we sell the training. And even if they've come from 20 to 30 years of dirt bike riding, I'm like, this is not the same. So it's, trust me, just take the class, it's totally affordable, and you'll laugh at yourself. And you know, I've had guys, you know, a lot of these riders are 30, 40, you know, 50 years in experience. And I had one guy, he's probably had, you know, 50 BMWs, took the class last summer, and he's like, I can't believe I didn't do this sooner. Mm. And he said, he couldn't believe that you could take a bike off road. And even though he's done dirt bikes and everything, he just didn't believe it. And he took the class and he was just totally floored. Wow. So, we try to, you know, the biggest thing with selling these bikes is the training, is the safety and making sure people are safe on the road on 2 wheels. And, you know, a lot of people think it's, you know, watch out for cars and watch out for, but, you know, I think it's 80-85% of motorcycle crashes are the rider's fault. So it's because of either lack of training, you know, they're new to the bike, or they got a new bike, or you know, they're intoxicated or something. But so you know, getting the most training you can, even if you have the experience, you know, it's best. I try to do something every year just to, you know, just to keep skills sharp and
learn something new. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's one of the cool things too about BMW is I get approached a lot, and I know you guys do too, Chris and Steve. On you know. If I'm a new rider, where do I go to take my course?
Yeah.
And I never bash like another dealership or you know, a dealership that offers intro level courses and stuff like that. But I know I've always heard nothing but great things about BMW and the classes that you guys give for motorcycle safety and riding.
For sure. Know. And the other dealers do as well. You know, like Santa Fe Harley and the Harley dealers here, they all offer training. They're all about the training. You know, so it's you know, it's way important, and you know, they're just to get people the skills to be able to do it correctly and know how to do it.
I started riding, you know, in my early teens dirt bikes and rode for 30 years without an endorsement.
Oh wow.
And well, you're not the only one. I still guess
And 2 years ago I was gonna be on a show, and they wouldn't a TV show, and they wouldn't let me ride unless I had my endorsement.
Yeah.
So I came here. And it was awesome. You guys were awesome. I knocked it out in, I think it was 3 nights, something like that. And great. And I got to be honest, I learned some things that I thought I knew, you know, and it's interesting to have somebody who knows what they're doing actually teach you the right way to do things. And, and I learned something after 30 years of writing.
There's things
something.
You forget.
Yeah.
You know? And even though you know you physically know how to do it, you're like, oh, yeah, I forgot you can do it that way or just think this way or whatever it is. And
yeah.
That was the biggest thing when I started writing. One of my close buddies, you know, had been riding for forever long. He told me, he's like, yeah, I'm thinking about taking the advanced class again just to sharpen my skills. And it's almost like taking, getting your driver's license or taking your driver's test again, like for your car.
Yeah.
It's like, why would you do that? But for motorcycles, it's 9-day difference. So it's.
It totally is.
You gotta have the skills.
I'd like to do the dirt. Off-road?
You should. Class. Yeah, it's local.
Chris has been doing a lot of off-road lately. I think that'd be cool, man.
I have. So I grew up on dirt bikes, got another dirt bike. I've just been out there nonstop lately.
It's not funny. It's close by. We actually do it at an old gold mine just southeast of Madrid. You actually have to go up to Cerrillos to get down to there.
Yeah.
And it's been a gold mine for almost 200 years here. So it's 3,000 acres of untouched land.
Oh, nice.
You know, it's one big pit, of course, in the middle of it. It shut down back in the mid-90s, but now it's just being kind of cleaned up and for environmental reasons or whatever. But there's so many roads up there that haven't been ridden on, they're driven on in decades.
Wow.
So it's way cool, the area we train at. And
all different kinds of terrains.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of it's, you know, just regular dirt stuff, hills, short, closed stuff, and you know, steep, rocky, you know, downhills. And
so if somebody wants to get sign up and take the course, explain mm-hmm. to us, like, what time does it start and what's the day look like?
So it starts at, you start about 9 in the morning. It's about 2 8-hour days. And each weekend's, you know, the most local ones, each weekend's slightly different, you know, depending on the situation. But, you know, the first day we bring lunch, you know, just hang out at the mine all day and just do all the training. And we'll do a little in-class stuff in the beginning first. I mean, pretty short. And then we'll just jump on the bikes and go out to the parking lot, the dirt lot, and start doing training, do a lot of cone work. A lot of short, small hills, you know, braking, rear brake, front brake, you know, skidding the rear tire and all that kind of stuff, just to know how to, just to get a feel for that 500 pounds rolling underneath you, you know, off-road.
Yeah, what are you guys riding?
1200
GSs.
Yeah, most, and these classes are, you're on your own bike, this training. If you go to the BMW school or the Rawhide school, that's when you can rent a bike. And I do recommend, I did that the first time, I kind of do recommend that first if you don't feel like
dumping,
you know,
a bike.
Taking your $22,000 bike and dropping it five times that day.
Yeah.
Just to get used to it. And then after that, get your bike and go out and do your own thing. But you can rent the bikes there. Everything's fully inclusive with food and all that stuff. But so the one here is just 2 days, and it's, but it's close by. It's usually about a third of the cost of what the other schools are, so it's more affordable. It's only $495 for 2 days. But it's, you know, 16 hours of training. Mm-hmm. So it's totally worth it. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And then you can reach out to me or, of course, they all have websites and connections of when they're going to. I know they're putting out the schedules shortly for this next year. And so we'll know what all the tours are and the trainings and all that.
Do you guys, on your courses, do you ever talk about, like, camping gear? And since that's a big thing with the dual sport, do you guys introduce, like, levels of camping and what to pack and how to pack for?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, we actually do that. We'll do that at the training. We actually will do it here, too. So there's another gentleman we work with, Matt Brumit. He runs the Rule of Five Survival Training School. This is basic survival training. And he actually has been teaching it for, like, 20 years. So we've been incorporating him with our adventure riding for, like, with stuff to carry when it comes to, you know, first aid kits, you know, lighting fires, safety equipment. If you crash, nobody can find you, that kind of thing. But yeah, we do all kinds of stuff on camping, what gear to take, what kind of bags and stuff you want to put on your bike. If you want to go hard cases or soft bags, that kind of stuff. We'll go through all the details on those and what works best and you know, all the gear and stuff too, and kind of boots and helmets, and we'll go through all that kind of training.
Yeah, that's
to help out.
That's a great idea.
Yeah,
such
absolutely.
A good idea.
It's a lot of fun because it's funny now. Like, you know, I've done some camping all through my life. You know, you have your big tent and, you know, all the stuff, and, you know, you just have the back of your pickup full of camping stuff.
Right.
I can literally hold all my camping gear in my hands now. And
yeah,
even when I see, I mean, I'm all into the adventure trucks and all that stuff, but even to see a big tent on top of a Jeep, I'm like, man, that's a huge tent. Why would you even need that?
Yeah.
Right. When you're just going to sleep in it for 8 hours.
Travel light.
Yeah. Take a tiny little tent and a sleeping bag, and that's all you got. And
well,
so it's simple.
And that's the thing, too. It's, you know, that when you do an overnighter or even a couple of days and you're packing your bike, you don't know exactly what's going to work on that long trip, right? I mean, I've done so many trips, like almost cross country, where I'm like, okay, I'll tighten up my gear, pack up all my stuff,
mm-hmm.
and then 5 or 6 hours later on the trip, you know, that cord's hanging off, or
yeah.
a strap is broken,
yeah.
and your pack's leaning off to the side.
Totally.
And, you know, and you're like, dang, dude, did I really need to carry all this? And what do I need to get rid of? And
yeah.
you know, it's just one of those things that I think somebody that's experienced and can walk you through it
exactly.
can help a lot. You know, and you don't know until you're actually out there and you're doing, you know, 75, 85 miles an hour, whether or not your pack's going
to
hold.
Yeah, just know? To simplify it. And that idea all comes down to having good gear.
Yeah.
You know, people always ask, man, why are these things so expensive? You know, why are the, you know, the gear a lot of time, you know, is a lot more expensive sometimes than the bike is. And it's just because it's high quality. You know, it can take a beating. You know, like I run all soft case stuff, soft bags on my stuff now, just because, you know, I drop the bike and, you know, cases will get damaged. Soft bags doesn't.
Tell us a little bit about, like, one of your best adventures, something that really stands out to you.
probably the best adventure was, I've done about three or four this last year, camping off the bike. But the first one we did a scouting trip, me, Dusty, and Matt, up in northern New Mexico. It was actually last September, last year ago. And we pretty much load the bikes up, and Matt's got some land up near north of Taos. And we camped out there for two nights. But and we just literally go up there, camp, you know, lower your tire pressures, you know, take your traction control off, and we rode what's called the BDR, which is all the off-road roads up there. And we just did that for three or four days, and nice. Just scouting for tours and trips. And there's no, you know, there's no schedule, there's no structure. You know, we just kind of go out there, have fun, check it out, and we're like, okay, it's getting late, maybe we should set up camp here and just go find out in the middle of nowhere, you know, no cell reception, just storms around us, and then that night it was dumping rain, and we're all just sitting in Matt's little tent he had, we're all just laughing, drinking some whiskey, and it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah,
but yeah, just to be able to take the bike and go off road and go down rocky, steep hills and creeks and all that stuff, and it's just so much fun to be able to explore. And yeah. In a lot of these places, you can't even take Jeeps or, you know, trucks in. Yeah, so it's
yeah. Yeah. If you're not familiar with northern New Mexico, like some of our listeners are around the world,
yeah,
it's beautiful up there, and it's like untamed wilderness mm-hmm. in some of those places, and that time of year is just phenomenal.
Yeah,
and it's just amazing to be out there.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize. I mean, yeah, because I keep forgetting we're talking to people outside the state. I mean, yeah, 15 minutes outside of Albuquerque, you can be off road in yeah. open space.
Right,
it's nothing, you know, dirt roads and whatever. There's nothing regulating anything, and it's a lot of fun, and we have such. And it's not hot here. You know, people always think, man, how hot is it down there?
Yeah.
It's like, a desert. 5,200 feet approximately, man. It's not that hot. And it might get to 100 for 3 weeks in June, but that's about it.
Yeah.
And it's no humidity. It's dry. It's comfortable. And I remember I went to superbike school two summers ago out in Alabama at Barber. And I knew, like, it was, I think it was in August, too. I was like, it's going to be so hot there because, you know, it's 95% humidity.
Yeah.
And I get there, and I'm glad it was only a day and a half long because I was in leathers all day long. And I was like, this is horrible. I don't know how people live here. Like,
right.
It's a pretty state. You know, it's really pretty and off, but just the weather is just rough.
And your helmet's like, always fogging up.
Everything's foggy. Yeah, you're sweating. You smell. Like, it just, yeah, it's like, yeah, this the weather here in the landscape is just amazing. Yeah. And it's so different. I mean, we have everything from 2,000 feet up to 14,000 feet.
Yeah, here. I mean, yeah. You know, you go up to Taos, and like you mentioned, you know, you go to Taos, and I did a lot of camping up in Taos, and overnight, you know, it could be beautiful in the day, and then that night, it's either raining or snowing, and it's going to yeah. come out of nowhere. And, you know, there's you can get lost for days up there.
Yeah.
There's so many fire trails and off-road trails up there that, you know, it's a really fantastic area to go off-roading on.
So a lot of people like to fly out here when they actually know what New Mexico is like. Like, yeah, I want to come out and ride the mountains in Colorado. I'm like, yeah, come out. We'll sell you a bike, ride it, and we'll do the service, and they'll ride home. And did that to a guy in New York and a few other places out there in Florida. Nice. So it's really cool.
One thing I think you guys do, correct me if I'm wrong, but which a lot of dealerships don't do, is you'll work on old bikes, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'll work on everything back to 50s, 60s, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, yeah, we'll work on anything here. Yeah, both guys are... We have two, you know, long-term trained technicians. Our Santa Fe technician too. He's been working with BMW for, you know, 15 plus years. Knows all the classic. These guys know all the classic bikes, all the Airheads. We worked on a 39 Zundapp up in Santa Fe, which parts we actually had to make.
Wow.
You know, they just don't make them anymore. Yeah. Yeah. So we'll take on anything. Like it's nice because a lot of guys aren't, you know, like new guys coming out of tech school aren't trained on the old stuff. They're trained to look at a computer and figure this out. They don't know how to diagnose a noise or anything else, and they have to. They're all depending on their electronics. And no, it's like a lot of these bikes are. There's still a lot of mechanical ones out there. You got to be able to know what basic fuel stuff is and basic electronics is, and just to be able to find problems and rebuild. Yeah, we do restoration. Usually winter times, we do a lot of restorations and full frame ups, and sometimes just engine rebuilds or whatever. So yeah, we can tackle anything, and
that's awesome.
Yeah, and we get calls from people from Arizona and Colorado because they're looking for people to work on their bike, even though they can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in today's world, a lot of people just don't have the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to do my own oil changes and all my classic cars and trucks and whatever. It's like, I just let people do that now because I just don't have the time.
Yeah.
It's still fun to do it here and there, but, you know, especially when we have kids and whatever else and businesses, and it's like, this just don't have the time for that stuff.
I don't know if, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like BMW guys are real specific about making sure other BM guys are touching their bike, right?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, because, yeah. I mean, there's something about it. I mean, it's got a great legacy, first of all. You know, there's a history to it. And I think, even myself, you know, modifying old BMWs, you don't change a lot mechanically. You know, the motor, I mean, you want to make sure that that's...
It's reliable.
Reliable and the way it's supposed to be. You don't do a lot of mods on it, you know, so...
To go off what Tyson's saying, too, is that's the biggest difference between, you know, motorcycles and automotive. Is the service department, and when the customer comes in, they want to know who's working on their car, we're working on their bike, and we allow that. You know, we allow customers, you know, to a point, but we allow customers to go back in the shop and meet the technician and hang. A lot of them know them all by first name. You know, a lot of guys know all their bikes and customers, and they know what's going on. You know, there's a huge amount of trust built, and so you know, when a bike comes in for a rare problem or odd, where you know we're not just sitting on it and hoping to fix it, the customer understands that we're doing all we can to get it fixed.
Yeah.
And they trust us, you know? And if, you know, if it leaves and there's still a problem existing or something else pops up, you know, they'll come back and be like, hey, you know, they're not all bent out of shape. They understand they're still riding a 38-year-old bike or whatever, and things happen, you know? Yeah. So, you know, other things fail or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's a very big, you know, just the trust and the fun and the community. It's just a lot more than just dropping your car off for an oil change at Jiffy Lube or whatever. You know, it's a totally different, you know, different community. Yeah.
What do you guys have coming up? You guys have any events coming up?
Any retro events?
I mean, we kind of like to.
Yeah, well, you know, I definitely want to get with you guys and definitely set up a cafe, a classic bike event. You know, to bring in Triumph. We'll call Scott and we'll get something figured out and do some big collaborative thing. So every year BMW puts out at least 5 to 8 new models. You know, whether they upgrade a model or a new bike. So they have the new 750s and 850 just came out, and we have the new 1250 boxer engines that are coming out, and we'll get those actually next week. And so we're gonna do an open house on the 30th from 5 to 7, going over the bikes and what they offer and styles and all that stuff, and then talk about what else is coming. So we have that coming up. We usually go to month in we try to have at least 2 or 3 events a month just to get people in here and provide food, and anytime you provide food, people are going to come anyway. You know, so it's
food, coffee, and beer.
Yep, exactly. You know, whatever warms your heart. So it's a big deal.
You know, myself, knowing a lot of the older Triumph guys and the Triumphs, I'm not familiar with BMW, but I'd love to see some old vintage BMWs roll through. I know Predoc, I was just drilling over his old, he's got like a 39. Old Airhead BMW, and you know, I'd like to see some of those old classic BMWs roll through.
That'd be really cool. There's the New Mexico BMW Riders riding group here in Albuquerque.
Yeah, they're the LOE, the Land of Enchantment Riders.
Enchantment Riders.
Yeah, we support them, of course, and they do riders challenges and all that kind of stuff with them.
A few of those guys have some old Beamers.
Oh yeah, they've rebuilt, and a lot of people realize we actually have a couple amazing bike builders here in the States. Mm-hmm. In the state, we have Jim Mosier up in Santa Fe. He's building those classic Indians and Harleys, all frame, all, you know, custom bikes. You know, we have a lot of motorcycle enthusiasts here that build and do custom stuff and old stuff, and that's the biggest thing I've been working on over the past, you know, 3.5-4 years I've been doing this, is just getting the community together, and not being so separate. You know, Triumph and Harley and BMW and all are doing their own thing. And that's kind of the cool thing with the adventure bike segment, too, is like, you know, we have our Facebook pages and GS Riders or whatever, but yeah, most times when we go on rides, there's Triumphs, you know, there's Africa Twins and there's other bikes. And it's like, it doesn't matter what you're riding. Let's just go out and have fun.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and let's get, we're all on two wheels. Doesn't matter. And so it's really important. That's what I think is really cool with Russ's Gold and your, and that's, you know, the perfect example of, you know, business community coming together and not being so separate. And that all goes to, you know, comes back to the motorcycle side. You know, a lot of it all coincides. And in today's world, everybody's so individual and so, you know, selfish in a way. You know, a lot of people, we're all on our phones and doing our own thing, and people are forgetting to get out and get in groups and hang out and have some friends. And
yeah, we're living in a real polarized world right now, and motorcycles, I think, is one thing that sort of brings people together for us, especially because we ride with a lot of people that are different political ideology and religious ideology. And you know what? It doesn't matter when we're out riding.
Exactly.
You know, we're out there. We're enjoying the environment and two wheels and. That's what it really should be about.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, it's still a very singular thing you're doing. You're riding a motorcycle by yourself. You know, you can't talk to the buddy next to you, you know, that's sitting next to you. But still, you all go in a group and have fun and stop and just enjoy it, you know, enjoy the time.
Yeah. Cool, man.
Yeah.
What do you think about, you know, just kind of to wrap this up, what do you think about where we're going with motorcycles and culture and, you know, the new electric bike thing? I know Harley's putting out their new electric bike here pretty soon. Mm-hmm. Is BMW doing anything like that?
Yeah.
What's the forward thinking on this?
You know, the forward thinking is pretty much the environment, really, and petroleum fuels. You know, it's in the U.S. and, you know, our culture is totally based on that. And we are going to be like that for still a long time, but... But a lot of people are warming up to the whole electric idea. And BMW's been the electric world for almost 15, 20 years.
With their cars and stuff.
They have a C Evolution scooter, full electric scooter, that's been out since 2014. They've only sold that in Europe, but that's now in the US now. We'll be getting those in January.
Cool.
There's talk. I've heard talk of hybrid RRRs. Hybrid GSs that they're working on. I haven't seen anything. There's nothing of, but just through talking to reps and talking to some guys when I was out in Germany visiting the factory and all that stuff. And like, yeah, they're doing some different stuff, you know. And that's the cool thing. A lot of people realize too, in a lot of these models that just came out, were actually already in development 8 years before.
Right.
So it's, you know, that's with a lot of brands today. So it's, you know, all electric stuff, you know, people are like, oh, it's so new. I'm like, yeah, it's really not. You know, it's just not as, people just don't know about it yet.
Right.
That goes back all the way to Germany and BMW keeping everything really tight.
Right? For sure.
And they're really secretive until it's, you know, they unleash it.
Well, it's still today. Even the past few dealer meetings I went to, I mean, yeah, you have to drop your phone off when you get there. There's no, can't talk, no pictures, no nothing.
Yeah.
And they have new stuff coming out in the next couple of years I still can't talk about, you know, that I know is coming. And, you know, it's pretty fun, you know. But you know, when it comes to the cult with the brands and the electrical world, yeah, it's going to be a lot bigger. It's the way we're going. I mean, to get on a two-wheel vehicle that has full torque from a stop is pretty amazing. Like,
yeah,
the C Evolution scooter they have, it literally has almost a faster time than a RRR does.
Really?
0 to 30. Yeah, so it's pretty cool.
Well, and it's super light.
Yeah,
it's all electric powered.
Yeah,
you know, I like the idea of the hybrid. That's something that you don't really hear a lot about, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
because that actually kind of appeals to me. This idea that you've got a hybrid motorcycle, I'd be interested to see how that RRR works out.
Yeah, and I think that the whole hybrid idea compared to full electric is a lot more comfortable to think about.
Yeah.
You know, they've a lot of these electric cars, you know, they have either full electric or they have a range extender, you know, a little small motor that powers up at the end or whatever. But for most of us, like, I can't, you know, to know I only have 99 miles to ride to get somewhere, I'm like, it's just like almost running on, you know, almost on empty all the time. You just have to keep watching the mileage countdown.
Especially for an adventure guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, being out in the middle of nowhere. And jeez. It's like, shit, where am I going to plug in? You know? Gotta bring a generator with you.
How much sunlight do I have left?
Yeah, exactly. You got to bring a solar kit with you so you can power your bike up.
Can't strap a little battery to the side, Pat.
Yeah.
But for commuting, you know, I think the idea of a hybrid is pretty awesome.
Totally. Yeah, I can't wait to get them because we'll have a couple demos for those. But it's an amazing idea. I mean, if you're going to ride it, if all you do is commute in town, an electric vehicle is perfect. It's what it's built for. But to have a hybrid idea, you know, especially in an adventure ride, to have like an electric motor powering up while you're cruising at, you know, 2 to 10 miles an hour, I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, especially being quiet and here's a little bit of a whine, but you have full power, you know, at any moment. And then, you know, when you get on and the engine powers up and you just take off. And today's, you know, the new hybrids now, they're all such a simple transition from the electric to the engine now, so it's people barely notice it. You know, the engine is so quiet, you don't even know what's even running at the moment.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Hey, well, thanks, man. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today.
Of course. Yeah, you know, glad you guys came down.
We're fans, you know. We're fans of all motorcycles, and mm-hmm. we're fans of BMW, especially me.
Yeah,
just saying.
Especially you. But I think you guys should get on some bikes now.
Yeah, we want to get on some bikes.
What do we have today?
I got a couple R9Ts. I got GSs, R2, whatever you guys want to ride.
Cool.
So it's up to you.
Yeah, we'll take a ride. We'll
see if we can't find something ridiculous with some high bars for Steve again.
Oh my gosh,
Steve! I know you love that bopper.
The trick is we got to put Steve on the most ridiculous bike whenever we do demos. That's,
yeah,
he loves them. Secretly, he really does.
All right, sure. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, guys. Man. Appreciate you.
Yeah, looking forward to doing some stuff with you in the future.
Yeah, might as well. Down the way, not too far, an old time rockabilly coffee bar, wrecking machine tucked in the back, Elvis singing about a Cadillac. I'm on a BSA, been riding all day. Leather's on, goggles too, triumphing, I don't know what you wanna do. My baby's on a Vincent, has been for quite a while. She said it's rocking just her style. So let's ride, so let's ride, so let's ride, so let's ride. Come on, turn up, I got love the cams. American rocker is a matter of fact.